Welcome to Not That Girl Anymore, part of the Liminal Network. I'm your host, Dawn Bouillon. This is more than a podcast. It's a sisterhood. We're reclaiming our voices, our worth, and our lives. One story, one truth, one brave step at a time. Hey friends, welcome back to Not That Girl Anymore. I'm your host, Dawn Bouillon, trauma therapist and coach, and the founder here of Embrace Your Brave. And this is a podcast where we talk about healing and truth and becoming who we were always meant to be. And today I'm joined by Dottie Griffin and Ashley Woodard, and we are just going to be having a conversation about perfectionism. So perfectionism, we're talking about that quiet, exhausting pressure to hold it all together, to be the good girl, the reliable one, the one who makes everyone else proud, even when it's breaking you inside. For so many of us, perfectionism helped us feel safe or accepted, but it also kept us small and exhausted. So today we're unpacking where that comes from, how it shows up in our lives, and what it looks like to start trading some peace for perfection, or trade perfection for peace, is how I should say that, and pressure for grace. So, ladies, so glad to have you with me here today. So when you think of perfectionism, for me, even right now, just saying the word out loud, I feel like this tightness in my chest. I'm feeling that about this podcast right now. Like, don't mess this up, you know? And, you know, that's definitely been a part of my story, and it helped me survive for a long time. But it's also kept me afraid, and it's kept me from being me. So what do you guys think of when you hear the word perfectionism? What kind of comes up for you?
For me, perfectionism would be the feeling like you can't make mistakes. Meaning the feeling that just these unrealistic standards and just expecting yourself to kind of have it all together, figure everything out, not make mistakes along the way, and just kind of have this perfect looking thing all the time. You don't ever lose your temper. You don't ever yell or get angry or respond in anger when you're, you know, and mess up. And so that's what that means for me. And just being very critical of myself too. And when I do make a mistake or when I do say something, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is who I am. You know, like it's one moment where I messed up and I was a human for a second. But sometimes when you have perfectionism, it can become a defining moment for you when it's not. That's not who you are. That's not who you are even most of the time. It's like a one-time thing, you know? So perfectionism can be a slippery slope of just shame and spiraling and feeling like you're not good enough or feeling like no matter what you do, because you have this view of perfectionism, and if you don't mark that perfectionism, then you know you're failing.
Yes, I love, Dawn, that you said, you know, how you were feeling perfectionism with this podcast. And one of the things I really love about this podcast is that we aren't trying to be perfect. You know, so that's growth right there for all of us. When I hear the word perfectionism, first thing that pops up to my mind is my childhood, because my childhood was based on perfection equals love. Yeah, so when I hear the word perfection, it really triggers me. And perfectionism really became just my way of being. And it's how I learned how to be seen and heard and loved. And I believe perfection was the only way to belonging.
Wow.
You know, growing up that way, I didn't allow myself any room for error, because anything less than perfect just felt unacceptable. And when I dig deep down into that wound, because I have a fear of being abandoned and rejected, really goes back to because somehow I wasn't perfect. Somehow, somewhere I was flawed, and I'm the reason why this is happening, or conflict is happening, or I'm not agreeing with someone, it must be my fault. So I kind of internalized everything as being my fault. So perfectionism is a trigger word for me.
And I guess when I think about it, I think that was the expectation. That was kind of the only acceptable thing as a kid. But like I said earlier, it relates a little bit more to what I was learning in the church. There was this perfectionism that was expected to not be a human, like you said, Ashley, like always be on your A game, always be good. Always, and that equals love. That equals God loving you. That equals you being a good person, And you guys kind of mentioned where this started. Like, Dottie, you mentioned your family. It often is those core primary relationships where we learn that perfection is the expectation or perfection is love. Brené Brown, one of my favorite people, has a quote that says, "Perfectionism is not the same thing as striving to be your best. Perfectionism is the belief that if we live perfect, look perfect, and act perfect, we can minimize or avoid the pain of blame, judgment, and shame." That's deep. Deep. Let me actually say that again because I think that we want to grasp this. Perfectionism is the belief that if we live perfect, look perfect, and act perfect, we can minimize or avoid the pain of blame, judgment, and shame. And so that's exactly what it is. It's armor. It's something to protect us from pain. But it also keeps us from peace. So perfectionism usually hides something deeper, right? And Dottie, you kind of mentioned this, but what fear or need do you think sits underneath that perfectionism for you?
Well, when you were describing the quote from Brené Brown, what was really coming up in me was perfectionism really wasn't my thing. It was my mom's thing. It was my mom's way of masking her fear of whatever it was. And that was kind of conditioned and put upon us. She had such a need to look perfect and for the pa family to look perfect. So she had us on this pedestal, that was really not attainable. But because she was my parent and told me it was attainable, I kept trying to climb that ladder to get there. But just hearing that, perfectionism really wasn't my thing. But because I grew up under it, it just kind of became part of who I was. And so beneath perfectionism for me is really fear of failure. Because failure meant that you were flawed, and failure meant that you weren't enough. Failure meant that you were going to be left abandoned and rejected. The beneath perfectionism for me was fear. And I feared that my authentic self was somehow flawed, that I wasn't smart enough, I wasn't pretty enough, I wasn't talented enough. So it was definitely fear that I wasn't enough.
Yeah, and I can definitely relate to a lot of what you said too, Dottie, and feeling like perfectionism was something that was handed to you by your family. I feel like in my family, we also weren't allowed to make mistakes. And, we were punished really harshly, even for making mistakes. Mistakes were just seen as something that was unforgivable. It was something that you were going to be punished for, and it didn't matter if it was a mistake. It didn't matter if you didn't mean to do it. You were still getting harsh punishment for it, as if you did it on purpose. And so I think growing up in that family system and growing up kind of feeling like you have to perform. And like I've said before, just feeling like we had to put on this show and we had to have this idea of perfectionism in our family. And so for me, I think below that was, and I think even in my family was, they were trying, perfectionism is essentially a false sense of control. When you think about it, it's like you're trying to control and you're trying to have a control of other people's perceptions of you. You're trying to control, whatever it is. And at the end of the day, if you really think about it, there we have no control. Control is just an illusion. And so when we really think about it and we're like, okay, so I actually can't control how people perceive me. People's perceptions are usually have a lot more to do with them than they have to do with me. If somebody has a perception of me that's incorrect, it's probably a projection or something that's going on in their life, and it has nothing to do with me. And so, yeah, just perfectionism, I think, in its deepest form, has a lot of shame and a lot of that fear of rejection, that fear of if I mess up, then people will think I'm not good enough. And that's something that I daily struggle with. Like, I have to daily remind myself when I mess up, or, if I forget to go get my kids from school, or if I yell at my husband, or get really angry over something, I have to remind myself that I'm a human and that I'm going to make mistakes. And that just because I made the mistake doesn't mean that that's who I am.
I love that you said that it was an illusion.
It's true.
Perfection is such an illusion. It is not attainable. You know, anybody who tries to attain perfection will never get there. So it's a mental construct that's embedded in our brains by whoever is needing to look a certain way. You know, for us, it was our childhood, our parents, but it is definitely, it's not attainable.
And I can see how I was just thinking about what this looked like for me, especially in my marriage. In my mind, somehow I got the notion that if I just did it perfect, like if I was a good wife, if I looked a certain way, if I acted a certain way, then I could get you to love me back. And so the expectation was perfection for me because I thought that was how you get love. And it's also how you don't get rejected, And so it's like this survival tactic in order to try not to get abandoned, try not to get rejected, the fear of not being enough, the fear of not being accepted. The fear of rejection, like you guys said.
And you know, all three of our stories are embedded in trying to be perfect for people who showed narcissistic tendencies. You know, trying to be perfect for my mom, who was trying to control everything, that perfectionism, it was fluid. It changed. It was a game. You can't win at that game.
Goalpost keeps moving.
Yeah, the ball keeps moving. And, you know, the more you strive to earn the love that you want from this person by being perfect, and then they move the ball, you never get there. And that becomes so frustrating. We start blaming ourselves, we start shaming ourselves. There's something wrong with us that we can't catch that carrot that's being dangled in front of us. When we really don't realize it's just getting moved.
Right, exactly.
And when we finally figure that out, we're like, okay. But it takes us so long to get there. A lot of work, a lot of, therapy and that kind of stuff to figure all of this out. Like, man, that carrot kept being moved. No wonder I couldn't be perfect.
Yeah. And it also doesn't work to get love, right? Because what I found is I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't. It's still not gonna be enough, you know? And when you're dealing with people that haven't done their own work and they're just taking more from you, or you're giving more of yourself into this bottomless pit that just keeps taking more and more, then we're losing more and more of ourself, and we're never going to get anything back from that. So it is a lie, right? The whole thing is a lie, but it's one of those ways that we learned to survive because it did keep us alive as well, right? When you think about our family systems that we came from, it did kind of work to help us survive, but it's not going to help us thrive. It's not going to help us actually live and be our authentic selves, right? When we are trying to hold everything together and get it right with our perfectionism, what's the impact on our body?
Well, we're always questioning ourselves. Did we get it right? And if we didn't get it right, then we're going to sit and ruminate and think what I could have done better, what I should have done, what I shouldn't have done, what I should have said, what I shouldn't have said. And all of that angst and anxiety gets stored right in our body. And, it makes us tense up. It makes us always be on high alert, hypervigilant in the world, just waiting for something to happen. And again, we never find ourselves in a state of relaxation where we can actually have an authentic thought. Because it's always this chaos running around in our mind trying to figure out what we did wrong. Because it's always that we always blame ourselves. We must have done something wrong. And when we can release ourselves from that responsibility of managing other people's feelings and, managing their lives, really, when we can release all of that, take some time out for ourselves to sit, breathe deeply, to meditate, to just listen to our inner selves, listen to our own intuition, get in touch with our gut and what it's telling us. That's when we can move forward in our most authentic way.
And I can feel it in my chest. I can feel it like that tightening in my chest and my breathing and my shoulders and everything else. And so it's just another way how everything is so connected and we don't realize it until we start paying attention to it. Try to start breathing or try to start releasing our jaw and lowering our shoulders. It's like, oh, okay. Even I'm just doing that right now and I can feel like, oh, there it was again. Just was holding that tension. And we don't even realize that that's
Don't
happened.
realize it, and unless we take the time to do the somatic practices, we can know them all we want. And if we go and we do them once or twice, there will be some benefit, but it's like going to a gym and working out. If you only go once or twice, you get very little benefit. But if you continue to do it, then your body just automatically is retrained to be able to release some of this stuff before it sits, before it gets embedded in our tissues. So we're more readily able to navigate whatever's being thrown at us. And we can just, okay, this is happening. Let me sit for a minute. Let me count to 10. Let me take some deep breaths, whatever it is. There's so many somatic practices that help, and it calms that physiology. And when you really truly feel the calmness, that's where you start feeling your energy. That's where you start getting your energy. Energy begins to be restored when you start being able to release all of this stuff. But we don't. We just hold it all in until it's like a volcano and then it busts out. And now we have to go and punish ourselves because we got angry or we got mad or we yelled or whatever it is we did. But I mean, yeah, it's all connected.
Yeah. And I can definitely attest to that too, Dottie. For me, when I started doing yoga or different things like that, different somatic practices, I couldn't like do the meditation part, or I couldn't even just do the yoga because my mind would just be like all over the place. And a part of that is probably ADHD, but another part of it was that anxiousness and that hypervigilance. And I can definitely attest to you, as I've healed and as I've gone practicing that on a regular basis, I've seen a huge difference in my body and in my mind and in my everything. And just you can breathe, you can take a deep breath, and it's different and it works.
And we think it has to be a long time that we sit in meditation for, an hour, or it really starting out
Yes.
with however long you can go. If that's 2 minutes, then go 2 minutes. And somatic work for you may not be sitting still. Somatic work may be doing yoga or some type of exercise. It might be going out into nature and enjoying a hike or a walk or, seeing the beach or the mountains, whatever it is you love to see, that's all somatic work. So, it's not just these few little things in this box. There's so many things to do that help us calm our physiology. It's learning what works for you and then continuing to practice that.
So good. One of the things with perfectionism too is it can kind of be hard to spot because it can look like excellence, or it can look like a super responsible person, or it can look, very ambitious. So what would you say? How can we tell the difference between excellence and perfectionism in your life?
I think excellence allows room for mistakes. And excellence allows time for us to learn and to grow. That's how we become excellent at something. It's by first being brave enough to do it, trying to do your best and learning from the mistake if one's made, or just learning how to get better. That's excellence. But perfectionism to me is there's no room for error. And perfectionism is when you make a mistake, you must beat yourself up 1,000 times so that you remember not to make that mistake again. At work, it's so funny. If I make a mistake, the reprimand that my managers give me nowhere compares to the how much I beat myself up. They can fuss me, but man, I'm gonna go and fuss myself 10 times more making that mistake. That's where perfectionism comes in.
I think for me, it's definitely the feeling like a lot of what Dottie said, I resonate with too, because that feeling of like you can't make mistakes, and if I'm making mistakes, it means the worst, instead of that, I'm just a human and I made a mistake. And sometimes I can compare myself to a person that's hurt me, or a person that's done really evil or terrible things. And I might be like, oh, I made a mistake that's maybe similar to something that they did. Maybe something minor, obviously, nothing huge, but just a minor mistake. And then in my mind, I might tell myself, oh my gosh, now I'm like this person. Now that makes me like that person. And in reality, I'm not at all like that person. And I didn't even come close to doing the things that that person did. But it's that perfectionism that kind of keeps you in that loop of that fear of, and really beneath that is just that fear of being like that person, fear of hurting people like that person hurt people. And so for me, that perfectionism can show up in that way of, me making a small mistake and then me attributing, like me just in my mind, just blowing it up
Right.
and just thinking it's this big deal, and it's really just not.
That's good.
just like what you guys are saying, it's like how we handle the failures, how we handle with messing up, how we handle with our humanity. Do we jump to that you're the stupidest person on the planet and blah, 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 saying all those really mean things? Because I used to be that person that did those things. Or are we able to give ourselves grace? Are we able to even expect that we will fail and mess things up because that's part of being a human? And therefore, we have more space for that. I think that's definitely one of the ways we can tell it a difference of, are we just pursuing excellence and becoming the best us that we can be, or are we operating from that perfectionism place?
Love that.
So why do you think it's so hard for a perfectionist to rest or to ask for help?
Because that's how
Asking
they
for a friend.
perfectionists struggle to ask for help because it feels like failure. We convince ourselves that if we're truly capable of doing something, then we should do it ourselves. And not only that, we start to begin to think, and why we, that was the old dot, because the new dot doesn't think this way. But as a perfectionist, I thought that if I asked somebody to do something, they weren't going to do it as well as I was going to do it. I did it myself. I heard something one time about, especially like in my marriage, when I think about getting from point A to point B, I think of it in a straight line as quickly as we can. My husband, on the other hand, can think about getting from point A to point B by going all over the universe, and then he gets to point B. But the fact is he gets there. My perfectionism was like, but babe, you're not getting there the best way. You're like, but I'm getting there. Get there the way I want to get there. It's something I had to learn. It doesn't matter if we're getting to point B by going through Z to get there. But we eventually do get there. But that's another thing of perfectionism. We think we see the best way, and if it's not done that way, then we'll just do it ourselves.
Yeah, that was a huge part of perfectionism for me too, that hyper independence and just that feeling. I think for me, I would just feel like I would be a burden to someone else. And there was also that fear that, like Dottie said, that they're not going to do it like me. They're not going to do it the right way. And so I need to do it. And that's been a huge thing in my marriage, and just allowing my husband to do things, like l allowing him to take over different things in the house, and then letting him do it his way. Because I'm like, I don't care if he does the laundry his way. He does the laundry his way. The laundry gets done, and it's still hard because there's that part of me that's like, it's not done right, but it's like, at the end of the day, it's like the clothes are clean, they're folded, and honestly, he does a better job than me. So, but it's taken me a long time to get there and just to let go and be like, okay, I'm gonna let you have this, and I'm gonna let you do it your way, and I'm not gonna, try to control the way you do it or make it perfect or make it the way that I want. I'm gonna let you do it. And thankfully, he does it better than me. So I'm like, this was the good thing that I gave up. And I hate laundry.
Oh man. When it's like receiving help or asking for help, part of the conditioning was probably that you shouldn't need help. You should be able to do all of this on your own. You shouldn't need anything, when in actuality that's not human. And we need each other, and we're all better when we can receive help from one.
Yeah, and I think as a mom, you kind of expected to do everything around the house. And there's a part of me too that feels shame that I'm like, why am I not doing everything around the house? Because it's like, that's what I've been taught I'm supposed to do, and I'm not doing that. Like, I'm letting my partner help me. And it's one of those roles that it's like, it's not necessarily just because it's something that everybody's doing doesn't mean that it's healthy and doesn't mean that it's good. And it doesn't mean that it's right. And that's something I'm learning in so many ways in my life, with marriage and how that's supposed to look and the roles that we're assigned as a husband and wife and all of those different things. And that's just another layer to it.
Yeah, for sure. It's allowing our strengths to cover our partner's weaknesses and vice versa, letting their strengths cover ours. You know, as perfectionists, we think we have to be strong at everything. You know, I know, like you let your husband do laundry. Mine cooks. He's a better cook. And yeah, for a long time, you know, I got flack about, oh, Dot doesn't know how to cook. Now I say, yeah, you're right, but my husband does, and he does a great job. And he cooks for us. And he doesn't mind. But he's terrible at doing the dishes.
And I'm a boss at dishes, so no.
And I complain that.
You need to come to my house.
So, I mean, that's how that works, you know, even in friendships, it's learning how to collaborate and learning how to let other people, safe people, of course, cover your weaknesses. So you're able to ask for help because you know that they're going to cover you and not, you know, make fun of you for not being able to cook all that good. I had to let that go because that was one of the things I got picked at about. Is that a word that everybody uses? Pick.
It is today.
You know, because Dot doesn't know how to cook, you know?
It
It's okay. I can cook well enough. He just does better.
Well, and I'm thinking about how you guys are really giving examples of how that impacts our relationships, because if we are expecting ourselves to be perfect, then we're going to be expecting everyone else
Yes.
to measure up to that same standard, which is an impossible standard. And the balance that you guys are talking about is finding that space where both people can authentically be them and show up in the places where they feel like they can show up. And so, yeah, it's kind of that grace piece, right? Perfectionism doesn't just disappear overnight. It softens through that grace and that compassion. And we've kind of already talked about this a little bit, but what is it that has helped you of letting go of that perfectionism, just personally and in relationships or even in your faith or your body or whatever that might be?
Well, I think for me, practically, is just kind of letting the safe people in my life know, that I'm struggling with X, Y, and Z. This is my fear. This is my feeling. This is like, help me. And then they can reassure me, and then they can we can talk about it, or we can figure out a solution. And then just allow, also being in that space where you can make mistakes. And that kind of reflects, I think, even into the unsafe spaces, where you kind of know your people and your safe people, and you're like, I'm safe to make mistakes with these people. I'm safe to be honest with these people. And then you go out into the world where you don't have those safe people, but you kind of know you have that backbone. I think back to, I don't care what anybody thinks except for those important people. Those are the people that I care what they think. Those are the people that I respect. They respect me. There's that mutual love, autonomy, all those good things. And so I kind of reflect back to that even in those moments where I'm around people who might be judgmental or people who might not allow flaws or whatever. And I can just be like, that's okay. Like, I don't have to take on other people's or what I think other people's feelings, emotions, or thoughts might be, or perception. And I could just kind of let go. Like, I think ultimately it's letting go of people's perceptions, what I think they are, letting people think whatever they want, and knowing that that doesn't define me, that's not who I am, and allowing myself to just be human.
Right.
make mistakes, to figure it out, to heal, to heal. Because healing is not a one-time thing. I
Right.
think I've thought for a long time that it was like one-time thing, Like I've heard Dottie say, she's like, I was gonna go to three therapy sessions and I'm gonna be
Yeah.
done.
Right.
And that was my mindset too, because I thought like, I would go to a church service, and I'd go up for prayer and I'd cry and and I did have those moments in church services and I did freedom retreats and I did all these things. And I was like, okay, why am I still not perfect? Why do I still feel feelings? Why do I still make mistakes? Why do I still struggle? And I realized it's because I'm human. So I think a big part of letting go of perfectionism has been allowing myself to be human.
Yeah, that's so funny that you mentioned my three therapy sessions. Because when I first went to therapy, I was really in my perfectionist mode. She was so good at seeing right through that. She blew the lid off of all of that, but just going through the healing process and being able to let go of that perfectionism, I had to come to the end of myself. Like, you don't have it all figured out.
Yeah.
Because if you did, you wouldn't be in this pit of emotional despair that you're in. So those things weren't adding up. If I was being so perfect, then why is my life so chaotic and miserable? So it was really just letting go of having that control, which I saw my mom do so much in childhood, and learning the language to be able to ask for what I wanted. That just really helped my marriage so much, because now I'm not expecting my husband to read my mind. Like, why can't you read my mind? We've been married for 40 years and you still can't read my mind, So now I have the words to tell him what I need, what I'm thinking, why I'm thinking it, why I'm feeling that way. And guess what? He understands. And he goes, oh, okay, I can help with that. And then together, there's nobody trying to be perfect or be in charge or in control. Together, we can figure this out. So when you let go of that perfection and all of those conditionings and prejudices that you grow up with, and really start collaborating and working with people. I love, Ashley, when you talk about finding your people. We talk about that a lot on this podcast, because it's so important to find those people. Because you don't have to be, they applaud you not being perfect. They applaud your uniqueness. People are so scared of what they don't know. So in those groups where you feel safe, your uniqueness is applauded. It's not feared.
And I think what keeps coming up for me is, as you guys are talking, is a big shift happened for me too when I realized that that wasn't God's expectation of me either. Right? That he's just love and he just loves me, not for what I can do. Because I was that Christian that tried to be perfect. I was, if you tell me this is what it looks like to love God, I'm going to do it like 10 times harder. You know, if you tell me I got to do my quiet time every day and read scriptures for this certain amount of time and pray for this certain amount of time, if you say it's an hour, I'm going to be there for two, three. And so it took a huge weight off of me when I realized that was never the expectation from him either. Unlearning all the things that I had learned through therapy and all of that. Also, it was this permission to be a human and that we actually celebrate that. That was so deeply embedded in me, thinking that that was the right way, that I had to free myself of this right way thing. That if you attain this right way, then you'll be loved and accepted and acceptable and all of that. And so it was just kind of that stripping away of like, oh, okay, I just get to be me, you know, and I get to be human. And it does make a huge difference when you have people in your life that celebrate that part of you, you know, or that celebrate, that create that safety and invite you to really be authentically you with, you know, that means all of you. Even when you mess it up sometimes, you know, and it's like, you know, it's something to be fully yourself and to still be loved and to be loved by people in that way. So I think that was a huge thing for me as well. And then the other thing is that self-compassion piece. How has that kind of helped you guys, like learning to have compassion for yourself?
That definitely was the pathway to my healing, is self-compassion. You know, it's learning to love myself, is finding who Dot really is authentically. You know, and I began to have grace when I made a mistake, you know, because I let go of that perfectionism and, okay, what can I learn from this now? And, you know, I can talk to myself now with gentleness instead of judgment. And I think healing really begins the moment you choose that mercy over self-criticism. So it's definitely a journey and it's work. It takes a lot of work and you got to do a lot of brave things, but it's also worth it.
I definitely, it's a huge journey. You know, it's a consistent, just like the somatic work, you know, it's a consistent reminder that I have to continue to remind myself to be compassionate towards myself. And I have to remind myself to give that same compassion that I give to others back to me. And it's, I mean, self-compassion has been huge in breaking the perfectionism and breaking the criticism and all of those things, because it's just allowing myself to make mistakes and not let those mistakes become defining moments for me. You know, it's allowing myself to show up really real sometimes and know that, and having those safe people around you is so important, because they're not going to weaponize it against you. They're not going to take that moment of weakness that you showed and say, oh, that's who she really is. You know, they're going to be like, Ashley made a mistake. She had a moment. It's that self-compassion aspect of it, and learning that there are safe people around you that are going to also show you that and mirror back that compassion. Because I think if you don't have safe people around you, it's really, really hard to be self-compassionate. It's going to make it really difficult. It's going to continue that cycle of just being critical of yourself and being hard on yourself. But when you surround yourself with people that are also compassionate and who are going to show you compassion and remind you to be compassionate towards yourself, it keeps you going in the right direction.
I had something happen just recently where I call it a mom fail with one of my kids. And I still think it was a mom fail. I had some financial anxiety and I brought that up to her for a field trip or something that she had, and kind of put that anxiety on her. And she stopped asking me about it. And then the field trip came and she didn't get to go. And I was just crushed. I was just like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I did this to her. You know, that was a moment that I could have beaten the shit out of myself and probably would have in the past. But I was able to give myself some compassion, and I was able to tell my friends about it and get some comfort and reassurance. And also, it was a moment of giving myself permission to be human, you know. And it was also a moment I could take to repair that with her, because she was very gracious with me. She was very understanding. But, you know, as a mom, I don't want my kids to feel that responsibility, you know, or that financial anxiety or whatever that was. But I was able to love myself out of that, you know, into an okay place where I think both of us end up benefiting from it.
And that's the bigger picture. You know, the bigger picture is you, she didn't get to go on the field trip, but she now had that interaction with you where she can trust that you're going to admit when you've done something that might have been harmful or might have not been something you wanted to teach her. So now she knows, hey, my mom can admit that, you know? What a trust. That just builds so much trust between parents and
Yeah.
children.
And I think it says a lot about you too, Dawn, that you're able to go back and repair and say, hey, I'm so sorry. I realized that I put this on you or I made you feel a certain way. And that says so much about your character and who you are as a mom. And I feel like that's the thing that people don't realize too, is when we make mistakes, they say there's more power in the repair than anything. Like the repair is the most powerful part of any conflict. And so it's like if you can get to the repair, because some people can't even get to the repair. So it's like if you can even get to the repair, that's just so powerful. And that can be so healing and so redemptive.
Love that.
That well, I was just thinking, you guys are making me think, like if I was in a perfectionistic mode, how different that conversation would have gone.
Exactly.
Or how much I would have probably gone into a shame place, not been able to offer that comfort and not make it about me in that moment, but more be able to care for her.
Wow.
Love it.
That's powerful.
It is very powerful. Very powerful.
I'm grateful for the growth, you know.
It's not the battle.
And if that helps my kids learn that it's okay to make mistakes, or it helps them learn that I'm going to be honest when I do, and that makes them feel more safe with me, then obviously that's what I want, you know.
Yeah, because that makes me think about, you know, perfectionism, a big part of it is, you know, not being able to admit mistakes as well. And so it's like if you're in perfectionism mode, you're not going to admit you're wrong because you can't. Because it shatters the illusion of perfectionism and control. And, you know, and that's something that's been really important to me with my kids too, is being able to apologize. You know, and I've seen other people's faces when I apologize to my kids who aren't used to that, and they'll kind of be like, you know, you're apologizing to your kids, you know? It's so important when you make a mistake to apologize to your kids, because that it can, like Dottie said, it can create this hope for them that they can make mistakes and that repair is possible and that it's okay for us to make mistakes.
So, Dottie, I see that smile on your face.
So good. It really is. You know, it brings me so much joy to hear that, you know, this is what's happening in some family units. That's what I wanted so bad as a child, you know, and just to be seen and loved. But I can now do that with my own child, and I love seeing it in your families.
Aw, that's really sweet, Daddy. So, we have talked about self-compassion. We've talked about giving ourselves permission to be human, and then how we practice grace when we do fall short or when we do make mistakes. Do y'all want to say anything else about that, or you feel like you shared what you wanted to share? Practicing grace instead of shame when we make a mistake. I went first. I shared an example. So, how are we doing with that, ladies?
I mentioned it in the prior podcast about my daughter and realizing the mistakes I made with her growing up, and just being able to have that conversation with her and to just apologize to her for not allowing her to be her authentic self, because I was trying to create this perfect family. And when I learned none of that was possible, and I saw her for the beautiful, beautiful person that she is, you know, that opened my eyes. And so I too was able to have that moment with her. It's a moment I'll never get with my own mom. I don't know that it would have ever been possible with her mental illness, but I broke that cycle and had that conversation with my daughter.
That's
And
right.
hopefully, if she ever has any kids, then she'll parent more like you ladies are parenting.
You know, when you share that too, Dottie, it's kind of like you're also giving that to yourself, you know, at the same time. I mean, there's so many ways when we are parenting our kids the way that we wish we were parented that we're also doing that for our little girl, you know, little Dottie too, you know,
Love that.
which is really sweet. Yeah. We're all about redemption over here. We're all about the reframing and the reclaiming. And not just for the people in our life, but also for ourselves.
Yeah, and I definitely think for me too, you know, I haven't always been the parent I am now. And there was a lot of things that, you know, when I was a young parent too, I just didn't know a lot of things. And I think there were a lot of things that I carried on into my kids that have changed drastically over the years. Because when we first started having kids, I don't know that we ever apologized. I don't know that we ever admitted that we made mistakes, and we'd just be like, you just need to listen and respect us. And, you know, like just kind of like the old school 90s parenting. And so there's a part of me too that feels that regret for the parent that I was, or for, you know, the mistakes that I've made in the past. And it's even more so that I have to extend that compassion back to, you know, that earlier me in parenting, you know, and that earlier me who was a perfectionist and just trying her best and trying to, you know, appease and trying to cared so much what people thought. And it makes me nauseous how much I cared what people thought. Like thinking about it now, I'm like, oh, I hate it, you know, but I have to look back to that part of me too and still show compassion to her because she was just surviving and she was doing the best she could. And she made a lot of mistakes and she did a lot of things that make me nauseous thinking about it now. But I'm like, she was just doing the best she could. And all of those versions of me took me to who I am now. And I couldn't be who I am today without all of those versions of me and all of those mistakes that I made. It's just another piece of that perfectionism and that self-compassion of looking back on all those versions of me and being like, she was still good and she was still doing the best and she was still working, trying, and just doing the best she could.
I can so relate to that. I have had to apologize to my children for the way I parented early on, which in my mind was probably more thinking that I was being perfect, like thinking I was following the Christian parenting book in the best way possible, you know, which unfortunately I was. And but that wasn't necessarily good for my kids. At the time, I thought I was doing the right thing. But now looking back, that was more harmful than helpful. But to be compassionate to myself is that's what I knew. That's what I was taught was good. So I have definitely apologized to my children, especially my older ones that grew up with me not letting them apparently watch Finding Nemo or something. Like, I don't even know why now. I'm like, but that's just the person that I was. And my kids are very grateful that I'm not that girl anymore.
What a dangerous little fish.
But you know what's interesting is there's some ways I've swung to the opposite end of the pendulum. And I'm like, I hope you guys are better parents than me one day. Okay. But yeah, it's all grace. So, ladies, if we have someone listening to us today and listening to this conversation that is still afraid to stop pursuing that perfectionism or afraid to drop that ball and not be perfect anymore because they're afraid if they do, everything's going to fall apart. Do you have any words to offer to those maybe listening in that space?
I would say let it all fall apart. See where it goes. Let people pick up the pieces. You don't have to pick up all the pieces. If you let it go, somebody's going to help you. Somebody's going to step in and you're going to find out who those people are. Because that kept me, that fear kept me in that hypervigilance, that hyper, everything, hyper independence, all of that for so long. And I realized that as I'm letting go, that it's okay. That the world didn't blow up like I thought it would, when I let go of the idea of what I thought, like people's perception, just trying to control that, trying to control my kids or the people around me. Once I let it all go, I realized that I really didn't have any control to begin with. And nothing fell apart. The world kept turning and it kept doing its thing. And I'm okay. I'm okay on the other side. Better than ever, because now I'm not carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders and I'm more relaxed. I'm more just letting people do their thing and doing my thing. And it's beautiful, it's freeing.
I love that. And I'll go back to kind of what we said before is that perfectionism is an illusion. So if you're afraid of letting go of perfection, then it's really just an illusion. It's not reality. And like Ashley, I say let it go and take a chance on yourself, on loving yourself just the way you are. And as you begin to peel all those layers of performance back, start peeling them back, I think you're going to discover a gem. And you're going to discover the gift of being unapologetically you. And you're going to know that perfection is really not needed to feel love. And you're going to find peace in your mind and freedom in your soul.
Let's go.
Let's go.
I was afraid of that too. And it kept me in bondage for so long. And honestly, when I let things go, things did fall apart. And some of my greatest fears did come true. But on the other side of that, I found me. I found my authentic self that can actually have a voice and matter. And you can't put a price tag on the peace that I feel now, on being able to live authentically connected to myself without shutting parts of myself down and without trying to fit into some mold that everyone else wants me to fit into. I know it's scary. I totally understand that aspect of it. And I'll say it is worth it. It is worth it to no longer be abandoning yourself and to actually be living your life for you and connected to you. That's truly living. I think what the three of us are describing and trying to keep putting words to is that real, true, authentic living that's connected, that celebrates our humanity, that celebrates our differences. It celebrates our stories. It celebrates our voices. It truly works to lift each other up. And what I believe is when we do that, we're better and stronger together. We're stronger individually as who we are uniquely, but we're also stronger to together, being held up and celebrated by one another. So I just say it's so worth it. Like it really is. If you guys listening have resonated with what we've talked about today, and if perfectionism has been your way of staying safe, I want you to know that you can rest now. We are, here to show you that that is possible. You don't have to earn your worth or hold it all together. You are enough right here as you are. So, ladies, just one more opportunity. What truth do you want to leave with our listeners about their worth or their enoughness or whatever you want to leave them before we close out today?
I would say give yourself permission to be human. Give yourself permission to make mistakes. Give yourself permission to show up authentically.
Mm-hmm.
Just let yourself be human. That it's
Mm-hmm.
okay, that it's safe. And if you can create that safe space in yourself where you allow yourself to be human and you have that self-compassion, you're basically going to be unstoppable.
That's right.
Yeah, find the people who love you for who you are and build your life around that kind of community. And it may take some time and it might push you out of your comfort zone. But when you find those people, that's when you discover that, like I said, perfection's no longer needed to feel loved.
Yeah.
Love that.
Beautiful, beautiful words. And I'll just say, you're worth it. Like I usually say, you're worth it. You're worth whatever it takes for you to be able to experience that. Because you were never meant to be perfect. You were meant to be whole. You matter. Your story matters. And the world needs you, not the polished version, but the real one. And you're not that girl anymore. At Embrace Your Brave, our passion is to create safe, healing communities where women can be seen, known, loved, and begin to heal and thrive. Because healing isn't meant to happen alone. We heal best in community, surrounded by women who remind us who we are. We have two upcoming opportunities for you to join us. Reclaiming Faith meets on Tuesdays. It's a gentle, grounded space for women healing from religious trauma and spiritual abuse, learning to trust their voice and rebuild faith that feels free and authentic. And Reclaiming You meets on Wednesdays. It's a restorative, empowering group of survivors of narcissistic and emotional abuse who are ready to reclaim their truth, their voice, and their life. Both groups continue beyond the sessions with a private online community, a place to stay connected, supported, and growing together. These aren't just groups, they're sacred spaces where shame loses its grip and truth sets you free. Learn more or register and join us at embraceyourbrave.org because your story matters, your healing matters, and you matter. Hey friend, just a quick note. I am a licensed therapist, but this podcast isn't therapy. It's not meant to diagnose or treat anything. It's here to offer you support, encouragement, and real conversation. If you're struggling, please reach out to a trusted professional. You are not alone, and you are so worthy of healing. Even if your voice shakes, keep using it. Your healing matters. If you're ready to go deeper, you can book a session by clicking the link in the show notes or visiting our website, embraceyourbrave.org, to learn more about our therapy and trauma-informed coaching options. Let's explore how we can walk this journey together. You are not alone. Embrace your brave, sis. You're not that girl anymore.